At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help. So you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Don't waste time on emotions that don't do you any good.
Do I call you Lady Justice?
You can just call me Justice. Well, you tell me what a sandwich is, and then I'll tell you if a hot dog is a sandwich. When will there be enough women on the court? And my answer is, when there are nine. The two people love each other, and if both are women or both are men, why should the law put up a no sign?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 435, and if you're a non-patron, you're listening to this, that means it's election day. It's election day, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm nervous. Are you nervous, Thomas?
Yeah. Well, I'm a patron, so that means I'm hearing this on Sunday. So currently I'm fine.
Yeah.
Totally different
time. We're just watching football, you and me.
Yeah. Having a great time.
Remember football?
But yeah. Oh my God, election day. I'm so nervous. I was feeling a little better right up until the stuff we covered last episode with Kavanaugh, where it really just put into focus, like, we all know how bad the court is now and how bad it's going to be. We all know that intellectually. We've prepared you for that on this show, but just seeing it in action, and that's without even Amy Coney Barrett, just seeing how wrong Kavanaugh could, aggressively stupid and wrong Kavanaugh could be, it scared me. I'll be honest, it scared me.
Yeah, it scares me too, right? Like, the Biden campaign's idea of backup strategies is, well, our main strategy is we're going to win back Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And then our backup strategy is maybe we'll win North Carolina and Arizona, right? Like, their strategies are democratic in nature, right? They have to do with...
Yeah, they're like, we will try to get voters to elect us.
Right, to more voters to like us than like the opposing candidate. The Trump administration, and you know, just to be clear, right, the entire point of Friday's episode is to give Republican activists the ability to look at an individual slice of time, pick out the one that deceptively seems to paint Trump as being ahead, and then go get relief from the courts to try and freeze that point in time.
Yeah.
That's what the invitation is. And look, will it be successful? Like, probably not, right? But, like, neither probably was the 2016 election, right? Like, all of these are about sheafs of probabilities, right? And so, yeah, maybe there's only a 5 or 10% chance that, you know, that works. But, you know, as of when we were recording this, Trump only had an 11% chance of winning the presidency anyway,
yeah, right?
Without cheating. So, you know, it's just ways of, like, layering your options to cheat. And if that offends you, maybe get out and vote, please. We're very much like that. So, yeah, again, you know, same caveats. If you haven't voted and you're planning on voting in person today, you know, make sure you do it if you're not in a at-risk category. If you are, take all proper precautions. Take all proper precautions, social distancing, everything anyway. Prepare for long lines. Go out, go vote. You know you need to do this. And we're going to drill down on all the myriad reasons why you need to do this.
We haven't even gotten to hear how you're doing. Andrew?
I'm nervous. I'm nervous, Thomas.
Whoa.
I'll be fantastic.
Mr. Fantastic himself.
I'll be fantastic on Friday, I think. But okay. But today,
wow.
Today I'm nervous, my friend.
That's a sign of how serious this is. We're still in the pre-segment. I want to ask you more about those topics. But first, we need to remind everybody, if you're hearing this on Tuesday, there's an election night live stream coming up real soon. Tuesday night, election night. That's going to be at 5 Pacific. Come join us. It'll be fun. I'm apparently going to eat an entire pie, except I'm not because I'm trying to stick to my diet, but maybe Andrew will. I don't know. We may drink an entire bottle of something.
I may drink all the things.
I've been moderating lately, but I think maybe election night could be a cheat day. That's a good slogan. Election night should be a cheat day for me, not for Republicans.
Republicans. Yeah, that's right.
Cheat day for your diet. Yeah. Not for democracy. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Thank you. Please elect me, blank Q Boxman. No, vote Biden. Down. The law. Down. The law. Down. The law. Down. The law. But I did want to ask you, we ran out of time last time, but following up on that episode and what you've been talking about here, I'm still confused as to how this could work. You mentioned freezing time, I guess, was what they're trying to do. But because haven't we covered the fact that these state election boards, I guess, I don't know, sorry if I don't know the terminology, but they should be, right? Aren't they bipartisan? There's Democrats and Republicans in the room certifying results together. Like this isn't the first election in which we want to make sure the results are right, you know? Like this isn't the first time that someone's been worried about cheating on any side. There's systems to handle this. So where does the rubber meet the road in terms of they're going to be sitting there on election night and they'll have a certain percentage that they're complete, but those states aren't going to be thinking like, yeah, we'll just stop. You know, like they have a job to do. Their job is to count the votes. How would this even work to try to pause it or end it right when the count looks good for Trump?
Yeah. So let's take a little bit of a deeper dive into that. And let's contrast two states we talked about on Friday. We talked about Pennsylvania and we talked about Vermont. And the way that each of those states, they represent, I think, the two most extreme polls, right, in terms of how states process ballots. And again, I think they do that because Vermont is a blue state from top to bottom, right? The state legislature is Democratic in both houses. The governor is a Democrat. They are committed to having as many voters vote as possible and counting all the votes in an efficacious and sensible manner as possible. And so we talked about how Vermont, in light of expanding voting by mail, allowed anonymously, right, and in a nonpartisan way with oversight, but allowed state election officials to start counting results that come in by mail before election day itself, right? And if you were an alien, right, and you were just sort of like opining in general on how elections ought to be run, there doesn't seem to be any great, like, you know, I don't know, it's like the electoral equivalent of a gender reveal party or something, right? Like, what did you, like, count the ballots when they come in, right? Yeah. You don't want to make them public. That's fine because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to artificially distort people thinking, oh, trends are going one way or the other. Not only do I totally get that, I think that's the right course of action, right?
Like, yeah.
So yeah, keep them confidential, but like, you shouldn't have to pretend they don't exist, right? Like, you should just count them when they come in. In Pennsylvania and in more than a dozen other states, there are explicit requirements added by, and again, uniformly, this is not just me being partisan. You know, I tell you when both sides do it, right? Both sides engage in gerrymandering, but Republicans are better at it. This is a thing only Republicans do, and that there is a requirement in Pennsylvania law that they cannot start opening mail-in ballots until 8 p.m. on election day. And provisional ballots don't get looked at until all of the mail-in ballots come in, right? So in other words, you're going to have different states reporting different results in a different order. And here, I can't explain this any better than 538 did last week, right? here's what they say, and I want you to understand the numbers on this, because they are, because I sort of did it in my head, but I'm just going to quote from them. I'm gonna leave their link in the show notes. Right now, our forecast estimates that about 6.8 million votes will be cast in Pennsylvania, on average. And the average popular vote result gives Biden about a 5-point lead over Trump, 52 to 47. If that panned out, that means Biden would win around 3.6 million votes to Trump's 3.2 million votes, right? With a few additional votes for other candidates. And if the vote count followed what we saw in the primary, less than half of Biden's votes would be in by 3 a.m. on election night, whereas around 70% of Trump's would be reported. Okay, so you're with me so far. Like, all that seems, yeah, okay, right. Like, probably 5-point spread seems about, I love bigger than that, but hey, 5-point spread seems about right. That translates into 400,000 votes out of nearly 7 million votes count. Okay. And, you know, less than 50% of Biden's are in by 3 a.m. on election night, more than 70% of Trump's in. That all seems, those all seem like plausible assumptions. If you were to stop the counting at 3 a.m. on election night, how big a margin do you think that would show, given just those numbers, for Donald Trump?
The 500,000? I don't know. What is it?
Yeah, bigger than I thought from back of the envelope. I'm going to go back to quoting 538. This means we could be looking at a situation where Trump has a 16-point lead.
Wow.
58 to 42, based on 60% of the vote being in. But over the course of the next few days, again, assuming the same pattern that we observed in the primary, Biden would win 2/3 of the remaining votes, which would precipitate a 21-point shift in the overall margin from 3 a.m. on election night to the final result. So now, I want you to think about that. We are used to, you see 60% of the vote in, right? We are used to disregarding, right? Oh, it's 5% of the vote is in Idaho, and the Democrat is up 70 to 30. And you're like, well, pretty sure the Democrat's not holding on to that 70-30 win with 5% in, right? By the time they all come in. And again, they won't. But if you see a state and 60% of the results are in, and Trump leads by 16 points, I think intuitively I would be like, well, all right, then Biden has lost Pennsylvania, right? And it's why I quoted and read directly from this report, because the math is the math based on the overwhelming. And again, you've seen the news stories, right? Like, it's a positive thing that turnout is way up and that turnout by mail is orders of magnitude higher than it has ever been in the past. But what that means is the way in which you have watched returns coming in is also very, very different than it has ever been in your lifetime. And you need to keep that in mind. We will remind you if you're watching our live election live stream tonight.
Yeah, most likely I'll be freaking out and Andrew will be trying to remind me.
Yeah, that is 100% correct.
But I'll let everybody know that in 2016 I was freaking out and Andrew was trying to correct me and he was wrong. But this is a different election, I think. Different
yes.
Different way that votes are being counted and hopefully different result.
And I want to talk about that. But first I want to also talk about how election desks make their calls, because one of the things, I mean, we talked about this on Friday. So yes, I emphasize the Kavanaugh decision, super duper bad. Yes, they have a strategy that is designed to delegitimize the election. The reason we're talking about that is that you can do something about it, right? Not being swayed by false narratives, right, is incredibly useful. And now you know, right? Like, if Uncle Frank says, well, look, 60% of the votes in and Trump's up by 10 points in Pennsylvania, you really think they shouldn't call it? You can say, yes, mathematically, they should not call it. It is very clear. And I'm sorry that our intuitions don't match up to math. But no, the 60% that's come in is heavily skewed towards Trump. The 40% that's yet to come in is heavily skewed towards Biden.
But this is how it's always worked. This is like, I know it's a little bit different this time, maybe for, you know, because of the vote by mail and all this weird stuff. But like, we've always known this.
Yep. And that, I think we will be helped by the fact that no network is going to call states under these conditions.
Yeah. Oh, unless here's Fox News decides to lose their mind.
Well, here's what they do. So let's talk about everybody except Fox News first. Okay. That is ABC, CBS, CNN, and NBC. They all use an outfit called the National Election Pool, which is partnered with a nonpartisan entity called Edison Research. They are independent. They are third party. They are not owned by any of the major political parties. Okay. And primarily what they do is they conduct rigorous exit polling, and then they match up the exit polling against the actual vote totals as they come in. And so NEP does all of that calculation, and then they license out their data to all of the news outlets, which, like I said, ABC, CBS, CNN, NBC, Reuters, and the New York Times, among others, right? So everybody is getting it from the same source with an asterisk. What NEP does with their exit poll data is they use, quote, I'm going to quote from their website now, using proven probability-based sampling methods, the exit poll is a survey of voters conducted as they exit their polling places. It is the only survey measure of real voters, and it's conducted at hundreds of polling places. The exit poll also includes extensive interviews with in-person early voters and telephone surveys of early and absentee voters. Edison Research is the sole provider of exit poll data to the NEP. Okay, so here's the way you put all that together. 538 says average lead by Biden in Pennsylvania is 5 points. As people vote, Edison Research interviews them with exit polling. And they say, oh, look, our exit polling show that Biden is leading by 6 points, right? And then what you do is you don't just kind of look at raw totals, but you looked at the precinct by precinct levels when the polls close to match up how well the actual voting is corresponding to the exit voting, right? So all of a sudden, if 10% of the precincts are in and they've matched up, suppose 10% of the precincts come in and the aggregate totals show Biden up by 3, right? But they match up to the exit polls. They actually show in those precincts, those were heavily Republican precincts, and they show that Biden should be down by 5, right? So in other words, Biden is overperforming the exit polls by 8 points, and the exit polls had Biden winning by 7 points, right?
Okay.
Well, they wouldn't call Pennsylvania with just 10% of the vote in, but they would be very, very close to doing so, right? They would say, oh, look, our data showed a healthy win for Biden. Our polling data showed a healthy win for Biden. And as we match up numbers, actual real votes to the polling data, we see that our polling error was we underestimated how many people were voting for Biden. Biden's going to win this going away. He's going to win this by 12, 13, 14 points. And what they would do is then they use sophisticated regression analyses to figure out when they've counted enough vote to validate that their exit polling data is accurate enough such that now we can say, yeah, you know what? That's it. We're done, right? And that's why, by the way, you know, when the first round of polls close and Vermont comes in and they call it instantly for Joe Biden, right? That's because the
statistically,
margin—
statistically, it's insane.
Yeah.
Like they can call California with 0%, basically.
Yeah, and they do, right? Mm-hmm. So remember that. The wider the margin is, the less data you need to validate that margin because even systematic errors are unlikely to alter the result, right? In California, you could be off by a single, you know, you could be off by an entire standard deviation, right? And that doesn't matter at all, right? You know, Biden wins by 15 instead of by 25, or Biden wins by 35 instead of by 25. It doesn't matter, right? Biden wins. There you go. That's it. We're done. So the closer the race is, the more you need actual data to validate your exit polling model. And within a certain margin, they won't call it at all, right?
Yeah.
And that's how decision desks make their decisions.
Well, and especially because, correct me if I'm wrong here, like the fact that Florida got called incorrectly in 2000, I think did lead to a bit of reform in how news desks did not want to do that again.
That's 100% correct. And remember here that we are aided by the capitalist system, right? Like these third party, seriously, like these third party outfits are paid, right, by campaigns and by media outlets to deliver accurate information.
Right.
And if they don't, then you stop paying them. It seems kind of silly, but like it means that they have an incentive above and beyond kind of journalistic integrity, you know, to want to get it right. Because if you don't get it right, somebody is going to come along and say, hey, use my outfit instead. Which, by the way, is what Fox News does. Fox News uses AP data, right? So again, they're not just making stuff up.
Yeah, no, they aren't. I want to emphasize, Fox News on election night doesn't just make stuff up. I mean, they don't just do some comical North Korea, like every state red, you know, they don't do that. They were, they did act a little differently in 2000. So they, you know, they don't go along with everybody, but yeah, they also try to cover these things more or less correctly.
I'm going to link again the article that we linked in the show notes. It's the Fox News August 11th interview with the head of their decision desk that you can share with Uncle Frank as to why Fox News is not going to call, you know, Pennsylvania at 12, you know, a minute after midnight and say, oh, that's it. Enough votes are in Pennsylvania. Donald Trump wins. Now, that's not to say Sean Hannity won't do that. He's already done that on the air, right? Like Fox has gone to war with its decision desk in multiple occasions. So, you know, yeah, Tucker Carlson might, you know, declare victory and withdraw. But the news organization, the decision desk, will not issue an opinion in these circumstances, even while their talking heads might be, you know, might be deliberating about it. So look, like, what does that mean? That means not just totals matter, but margins matter. Some of the other tips, like, well, I'll save for you for when we're doing our live stream. So I don't give away everything here. Yeah. I did share out on Patreon, if you're a patron at any level, and I will probably update this before you're hearing this. But last week on Wednesday, 6 days out before the election, I did a very, very long post of sort of what I'm looking at in the polls, what a systematic polling error means, would look like, you know, sort of the conservative case for how to, you know, be cautiously optimistic about Biden, even in light of the 2016 election and all that. So, I think it's a good read. So if you're a patron at any level, you get a chance to see my thoughts on that, prior to our live stream.
Ooh, I just remembered we got to fill out our fantasy, electoral college maps.
We do.
And hopefully I'm better at that than at this year's fantasy football team in the OA league. I'm taking the year off since I won the championship last year. I'm just taking the year off.
Yeah, you gotta
don't let other people win.
Year. Yeah, no. I want to move from, I think it's fair to have cautious optimism about Joe Biden on this election day. Cautious optimism. Still don't go out, do your duty, vote. At last numbers, before our record, 538 gave Donald Trump an 11% chance of winning.
Way too high.
Yeah, which is obviously way too high.
And I don't mean they're wrong. I mean, the universe is wrong. Like that shouldn't be.
Yes. Yeah. No, sorry. If yeah. I understood that.
Yeah.
I understood you to be saying that. And I want to clarify that I'm saying the same thing too. The Democratic 538, same model. Democrats' chances of retaking the Senate are 78 to 22. Mm-hmm. In other words, Republicans have twice as good a shot as holding on to the Senate as they do of winning the presidency. And so if you're nervous about Donald Trump pulling, you know, a surprise win, which you should be twice as nervous about the Democrats failing to retake the
Senate. I don't need to be any more nervous, Andrew.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Do I have to double my heart rate? Is that how it's supposed to work?
Then you're really not going to like this. But I absolutely need to say it. And that is every single thing we've talked about on the show, the Judiciary Act of 2021, right? How aggressively are we going to fight back and undo what Donald Trump has done? If the Democrats don't retake the Senate, we will have stopped Trump from doing further damage.
Which is important.
But we will literally have Mitch McConnell will remain the majority leader. And we have moved into, right. I mean, you saw Chuck Schumer during the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings look over at Mitch McConnell and say, okay, the new standards are everything that is constitutionally permitted, you know, that is not expressly prohibited is now on the table. Imagine if the Republicans hold on to 51 seats in the Senate. Let me just tell you very briefly what will happen. Mitch McConnell will not just filibuster and block every judicial nominee. He's already done that.
Yeah.
He did that for 2 years of the Obama presidency and handed 140 judges to Donald Trump. Imagine not being able to pack the courts, not being able to fill vacancies mm-hmm. for at least half of the Biden presidency. Okay.
And as he's doing it, his body will have turned entirely purple because something seems to be taking over.
Yeah, he's very obviously Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the Force when you start going to the dark side. Yeah.
Yep. And if you ask yourself, well, you know, maybe they can reach some kind of compromise.
No.
I want to go back to my example.
No compromise.
Right? Let me prove this to you. Okay. In 2015, Mitch McConnell blocked the appointment of my friend Stephanie Gallagher to the bench in Maryland, despite the fact that she's a lifetime registered Republican. In 2017, she was renominated by Donald Trump to the same spot and was then confirmed. Right? Like literally,
it's almost
it
the substance doesn't matter at all. It's just if a Democrat did something, no. And if a Republican does something, yes. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. We have ironclad proof that that is what will happen. But it's not just the judiciary. Every cabinet appointment requires the advice and consent of the Senate. Mitch McConnell could refuse to schedule hearings to nominate a Secretary of State.
Wow. I wonder if he would do that.
If you think, oh, well, we could probably break that. Yeah, you could probably break that if what you were essentially doing is handing the presidency to Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and or Mitt Romney, right? If that's what you're saying, like, I mean, you know, look, we got plenty of listeners who are nervous about Biden not being far enough to the left for them, and rightly so in many cases, but Biden is way to the left of Murkowski, who's way to the left of Mitt Romney, right? If you don't want every person on a case-by-case basis to have to be somebody Lisa Murkowski is willing to stand up to Mitch McConnell over, right? Like, not just approve, you know, not just somebody she approves over, but somebody who is so good that Lisa Murkowski is willing to demonstrate spine, then make sure we take back the Democratic Senate. And now, let me tell you part of what that means, okay? There are Democratic senatorial candidates in deep red states who have a legitimate chance to win. They are underdogs, but they are way better underdogs than the overall 22% chance,
yeah,
right, that Republicans have of hanging on to the Senate, and way better underdogs than the 11% underdog that Donald Trump is. So, you know, if Trumpers haven't given up, you need to not give up on those folks. And I want to add one more bit of bad news. Again, this is going to be a happy but nervous day. I want to add one more bit of bad news for you to consider first, okay? And that is, this is Robert Erickson's article in the Legislative Services Quarterly, right, which is a peer-reviewed academic journal. It is from 2016. It is before the 2016 elections, but consonant with the results of the 2016 elections. And it is the definitive, the best academic piece of literature on presidential coattails. And it is this, quote, "Our analysis shows that politically informed voters are more likely to vote for Congress against the party they believe will win the presidency," end of quote. right? It is called the balancing effect, right? So for most of our nation's history, we had this belief that like when Democrats win, they add coattails effect to down ballot races. That study is somewhat, that baseline view has, there's been serious reason to call that into question lately. There's still some level of coattails effects on down ballot candidates, but it is balanced out by a balancing effect, right? And that is when it is perceived that one party is just going to stomp the other side into oblivion. Centrist voters, particularly those who have crossed over and supported the candidate winning by the perceived landslide, say, all right, I'm a lifelong Republican. I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. I'm not really thrilled about this Republican congressional candidate either, but I'm going to make sure that there's something there to stand up to Biden, right? Like, I don't want to go too far, right? And look, that's a stupid way of thinking about politics. I'm not suggesting that you ought to think that way. I am saying the academic research shows, and I've read this study, and I've read a fair amount in the literature, I am convinced that the balancing effect is real. And by the way, we've talked about this. It's part of the double whammy that hit us in the 2016 election, right? Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, so Democrats didn't show up in plenty of places. Mm. And oh, by the way, like lots of
a lot of people sent very valuable messages that helped everything and were received.
Yeah. That definitely helped the most liberal candidate win out in the Democratic primaries in 2020, right? Like
Totally pulled the party to the left, and the message was received, and you received. Got Joe Biden. Brilliant plan. You got Joe Biden and a court that's been ruined, so it's going to be even more impossible next time. Great job, awesome work. Sorry, I'm not bitter about it at all.
No. We're all bitter, and if you're angry at us. Like, look, you only got to get through one more day of this and then we'll stop, right? Do the right thing today and we will never shame you again.
If you're so petty that you were doing this and you can't acknowledge you were wrong, then you just don't want things to be better. I mean, that's just the truth. If you want things to be better, there's one course of action now, which is to vote blue up and down the ticket.
And so let me put an exclamation point on that. And that is academic research shows that the news coverage of the past week to 2 weeks is likely to have materially benefited Republican senatorial and congressional candidates. And so if you do not want to wake up and find out that Democrats have retaken the White House, that Biden has won nice and handily, we've got a result on November 4th, and Democrats picked up 4 seats in the Senate, but, you know, lost Doug Jones in Alabama and Gary Peters in Michigan, and so Republicans are going to hold a 51-49 advantage in the Senate. If you don't want to wake up and find that happen, you absolutely must go out and vote, and you must go out and vote, particularly in states. You know, we've talked about how every close election there is a surprise swing state, right? Nobody in Wisconsin thought they were in a swing state, or Minnesota thought they were in a swing state in 2016 until you were. I don't know what that surprise swing state is going to be, so pretend like you are in one. I can tell you states that I think are unlikely to be swing states, nevertheless, have super competitive Senate races, right? Senate races where the Democrat has a better chance of winning than Donald Trump does. And so get out there, right? Doug Jones has a 20% chance of winning his election, right? He's not dead, right? If you're a Democrat in Alabama, get out and vote. Yeah, Joe Biden probably isn't going to win in Alabama, but Doug Jones could, right? We've talked about Jamie Harrison in South Carolina. I want to just go through kind of quickly the states where Democrats have a real chance, right? A statistically significant chance of flipping a seat, even though you're looking at it and going, oh, come on, right? And the smallest of that probably is Amy McGrath in Kentucky. Could you imagine if we were able to defeat Mitch McConnell, right? Not just knock him out of the majority leadership.
I haven't even dared to dream that much. I just want a majority. I don't care how.
I agree. But if you're a Democrat in Kentucky, you got a slim hope. If you're a Democrat in Mississippi, we have a strong candidate that could win. Again, massive underdog, but better than an 11-point underdog, right, in Mike Espy in Mississippi. Again, MJ Hager in Texas has, as of this recording, a 14% chance of defeating John Cornyn for Senate. Again, yeah, is that super likely? No, of course it's not super likely. That's a better chance than Trump has. So get out there, right? Alabama, Alaska. The Democrat has a 1 in 4 chance of winning in Alaska. And I don't even know who that candidate is. It's somebody named Gross, right? you know, former Governor Bullock has a 1/3 chance of winning as a Democrat in Montana, right? Like, I mean, these are serious, serious races. The Democrat could win in Kansas.
I hope we pick up a few of these, you know. Yep. We're not going to win all of them, but maybe we'll pick up a few of these long shots.
Yep. But now, suppose you tell me, okay, I'm still not convinced. I'm in Oklahoma, right? And, you know, Jim Inhofe leads by 25 points in all the – it's Oklahoma, right? Why should I go out in Oklahoma? And the answer is you have state legislative races that are very, very important. And they are important because of what got us here from 2010, and that is this is a redistricting year, right?
I've been saying this for 4 years.
You are 100% correct. So remember, what Republicans did in 2010 was very little of it had to do with deep red states, right? Like, in Louisiana, you know, who the hell cares, right? Like Utah, right? Like you got a couple different congressional candidates. All those districts are going to be red. All the people who live there are red. Sorry about our friends in Salt Lake City, right? You know,
There's not much Jerry to even mander there.
Yeah, that is exactly right. Where they killed us was by taking purple states like North Carolina and blue states like Wisconsin and turning them into massive Republican factories.
Yep.
Right?
By winning when we were snoozing, winning these state level elections, it's catastrophic. I mean, part of it was just bad luck timing in that it was 2 years after Obama. You know, like now it gets to 2020. It's also a general election year that helps Democrats a lot more because Democrats vote in historically vote way more in election years than they do in non-election years. So we need to make
Democrats
right.
But Democrats can do two different things here. Right. The first is in deep blue states, they can ensure that they win back unified control or super majorities such that they can cram down whatever they want on Republicans. Best example for that, the state of New York. OK, I do not have the full time. I've been through the New York redistricting rules. But here's the thing. It requires the Democrats and Republicans to cooperate on drawing the map. There's this bipartisan commission, blah, 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 blah. But here's the thing. If there's a deadlock, right, and one party has a 2/3 majority in the legislature, they can override the commission map. They can break the deadlock. Okay, Democrats have 2/3 of the New York State Assembly. They do not have 2/3 of the New York State Senate. However, there are 10 Republican state senators who are retiring. So if you live in New York, you could be like, well, look, I don't have federal races that matter at all. And you don't, right? Biden is going to win whether you vote in New York or not, right? There's no New York, Chuck Schumer isn't up for re-election, right? Like, but you being able to vote and bring in a Democrat state senator may make the difference between whether Democrats can offensively gerrymander in New York to counteract what the Republicans are doing, or whether they're going to have to do what a bipartisan commission does and take away like one of our biggest abilities to block what Republicans are trying to do. How about the polar opposite of New York? How about the state of Texas, right? Democrats cannot retake the state legislature, and the Texas governorship is not up on the ballot this election. But we can do the opposite, right? If we flip 9 seats in the Texas House of Representatives, the Texas State House, then Democrats they've got no chance of flipping the Senate, right? Republicans would control the governorship and the Texas Senate, but Democrats could control the Texas House and stop Republicans from gerrymandering every single, right? Texas is going to have, after the next round of redistricting, because they're a growing state, they're going to have 39 congressional seats. They will be second to California. And if Republicans can cram down a map, that the 38 of those will be Republican, right? They'll draw a district that runs from Dallas to Houston, you know, through an alley that's, you know, I don't know.
This is going to be so important for 2022.
Yeah. I'm not going to go through each of the states, but I will tell you it is shocking the number of states. Maybe I'll talk about this during our live stream. Democrats have a real chance of preventing Republicans from redistricting Kansas at their whim. Right? Not because they've got a chance of taking back the legislature, but because Kansas, remember, elected a Democratic governor in Laura Kelly. So
I did not remember.
Yeah. The Republicans have super majorities in the state Senate and the state House. So in other words, they can override a Democratic governor's veto. So legislature proposes a ridiculous redistricting map. Governor Kelly vetoes that. The legislature overrides the veto because Republicans control two-thirds of the chambers in both the Senate and the House. Democrats only have to win three Senate seats or one House seat to take away that supermajority. And then forces them to the table. So there you go. I cannot find a state. I looked, right? I wanted to have one example. I wanted to be like, all right, if you're a Democrat in Alaska, stay home. But I can't. I cannot find a single state in which you as a Democrat do not have a meaningful say this election. And that's my last plea.
It's such absolutely great message. Let me try to sum it up for anybody, and you tell me if I've got it right. You know, like, in every state, no matter where you are, there is something you can be doing. I think this is the downside of everything becoming so nationalized in terms of our focus. Everything's about federal government. Everything's about the presidency, you know, and maybe the Senate and all that. Like, there is so much more than that. There's state level stuff that's important, and it's going to have a major, major effect. There is something, based on your analysis, Andrew, there's something for you to do as a Democrat in every state. There's something that you could either proactively be causing with your vote, proactively be helping, or that you could be preventing, a great harm that you could be preventing by not handing unmitigated power over to Republicans. So make sure you voted already, or make sure you vote, because there is something to be accomplished in every state.
Yeah. The number of OA listeners who say, like, yeah, you're right on. I totally agree with you, but I live in Tennessee, so who cares? I see that a lot. And again, I can't tell you enough. There's something for you to do in every state.
We need to become like Republicans were for the past 10 years. They were better at doing this than we were, and we need to change that.
And look, one kind of last plea, and that is, even losing can have value, right? And the greatest example of that is, right, Hillary Clinton lost Texas by almost 10 points in 2016, right, by nine points. Beto O'Rourke took Ted Cruz down to the wire in 2018, right? 2 years later, lost by 2.6%. And again, right, that's against Ted, you know, punchable Ted Cruz, right? Like somebody that everybody hates. But the fact that O'Rourke was able to lose narrowly is what enabled the Democrats to invest in Texas this year. Now look, probably Joe Biden is going to lose Texas this year, but Donald Trump had to campaign and go to Texas in the last week and a half of the campaign in order to shred. Like, wasn't that beautiful? That prevented him from going on offense elsewhere. It was brilliant.
That's true.
And so, yeah, if you're sitting there, if you're lamenting that you are stuck in Alabama or Tennessee or Kentucky or whatever, like, that part of how you convince the national party, hey, there's something worth counting here, is by showing up and by losing by smaller margins than you lost last time. That you ever really want to send a message with your vote, that's a way you can send a message with your vote.
An actual message, a real message.
Actual, real message, because that's just math, right? Like, I know we don't need to do this, but I'm going to do this aside. Like, the reason your vote for a third-party candidate doesn't send a message is because voting is confidential, right? It's a secret ballot. So we can't figure out when you vote, you know, Joe Jurgensen or D's Nuts or whatever, right? Like, we can't figure out. I think D's Nuts is on the ballot again.
Yeah,
I sure
probably.
Hope so.
Definitely a write-in candidate.
Yeah, they can't figure out if you're making a principled
statement.
Yeah,
they
don't
know if you're a never-Trumper.
Yeah.
Or that you secretly wanted, or maybe you wanted someone more moderate than Biden.
Right. Like,
Biden was too radical left for you.
Which, by the way, is where, you know, 2/3 of Jorgensen's political positions wind up, because she's a libertarian.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, we don't. Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to waste
valuable
any effort.
Message.
On,
it doesn't do anything. It does nothing.
On somebody with less of a chance of being president than I have. So.
But Andrew, the 5%, they got to get the 5% threshold.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Why not?
The quick thing I will say with that is, again, our listeners are smarter than this. Look back at every political party that's gotten to 5% in the past. Go back to 1960. Check it out. Lots of them have gotten there. And guess what? None of them has it made the slightest bit of difference in the next election. That is an urban myth. It has absolutely nothing to do. If you really want third parties to have viable ballot access, then you need to agitate for ranked choice voting in your state. Stop trying to mess up our presidential elections.
Who do you think is more likely to deliver you election reform giving you ranked choice voting? I mean, I'm not saying it's highly likely in either case. Like, we might not get it. What do you think the best way to get ranked choice voting is? Do you think it's to throw away your vote on nothing, or to maybe allow in some way to help Republicans take power? Do you think you think Republicans don't want any voting? They're not, let alone more choices, more power of the voter. The only chance we have of getting to a place where third parties might be a factor is by voting in Democrats, or at least humans who are responsible to public pressure. Republicans are not responsible. They are only responsible to Trump. And Trump does not give a crap about your ranked choice voting. It's not going to happen.
That I agree with that 100%. But I want to add, like, you know, another bone to that. Like, if you organize at the local level, right? Local politics, that's not 100% captured by national politics yet, right? I don't care. Like, if what you want to tell me is that in Massachusetts, let's say, the way to get ranked choice voting on the ballot is a coalition of left-wing Democrats and the remnants of the Republican Party in Massachusetts, that wouldn't surprise me, right? Mm. And if you want to say, like, hey, so I'm going to vote at the assemblyman level for, you know, J random Republican to be, like, for city council because he's promised for ranked choice, great, right? But you've got to do – there is right now, as far as I know, no ranked choice initiative grassroots work being done in Massachusetts, right? Build the organization first. Do the work. It's hard. And the idea that you can just sort of, like, hack the ballot by getting some doofus who's going to get 0.1% anyway to 5% it's just, like, empirically it's false. It has not happened. Otherwise, Ross Perot's Reform Party would be a perennial feature on our landscape. He got 19% of the vote in 1992, and that translated into nothing. I'll step down off my soapbox. I don't need to berate. I want to say I had this great segment on the E. Jean Carroll lawsuit. We're going to have to do that, as with all of our whiteboard stuff, in a
post-election.
We'll
see if we still live in a democracy after today's episode. Stay tuned.
It is a truly – but I will say this. You're going to enjoy this deep dive, not just because it has an Andrew was sort of wrong attached to it, but because this is a truly – fascinating judicial opinion, and it's going to give me the chance to talk about a lot of things that I'm really excited to talk to you about as listeners, and you should be excited on the merits too. So,
we've given you a lot of reasons to go out and vote for Joe Biden, but maybe the best one is finally getting an eminent domain episode.
I promise in December we will do, in November or December we will
I
do
I think we
eminent
should wait
domain.
Till January, like after he's sworn in, just to be safe. And also part of me thinks we should never do it because it would just be funny at this point, but no, we should.
Well,
You have our solemn pledge. Maybe there is an on-the-fence voter who didn't listen to any of our other not convinced by any of our other messages. But you know what? I really want a deep dive on eminent domain, so I'll go out and vote Joe Biden. That was for you. Okay, so in January, assuming he's sworn in, we will give you eminent domain.
There you go. Vote, vote, vote. Join us at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific tonight. We really want to see you there. You haven't had a chance to vote on the questions thread. You know how to do that. Just head on over to patreon.com/law and upvote with the heart the questions you want to see answered. Post the questions you want to ask us. And oh, man, like patrons have gotten so much great stuff lately. It's too much to even count.
And thank you.
All right. Now it's time to thank our top patrons, our Hall of Famers, our all time greats here on Opening Arguments, patreon.com/law. And why don't you start us off, Andrew?
And thank you to Nevin Dudez's Cow, Wesley Glenn Brock, becoming a patron to get 5 episodes a week, now to catch up on months of backlog. Matt Rogers for Virginia 47th House District. Well, this is a last chance. Get out there, vote for Matt. At Casa Agri is the best brewery. At Emperor's Brewery is a close second. Bradford, maybe now's not the best time to tuck your shirt in, Keaty. Great Dooku Tree, a turn tree general for the Galactic Republican District of Hyrule. Thomas Kleberg, Mary Perez. I'm an ancestor of Marcus Aurelius, Stoic tutor Junius Rusticus. Buddy Geyerson, Blank Q Boxman's worst nightmare. Big Docket Energy. We are ruthless. May her memory be a blessing. Idea for screenplay, Air Bud, man's best amicus. Please vote early and in person to save our democracy. Yes, if you're listening to this today, please vote early and in person to save our democracy. I have only 1 or 2 shots left to say this before it's too late. Effing vote Biden, save America. Yeah, this is it. 2 fabulous lesbians who are voting for Biden. Well, I feel good about all our shout-outs we've given you now. William Drew Collins, Bob Newhouse, Sassy Italy Tour's brother was murdered by a Trump supporter last year.
What?
Jesus, that can't be, wow. I mean, this is, we've spoken to this
listener
before.
You wait until
a
Patreon shout out to let us know this?
Yeah, send a message about this. So, Sassy Italy Tour's brother was murdered by a Trump supporter last year, so we don't really care about Hunter's emails. Yeah, right.
Sure.
Greg Kreimer, re-elect Senator Doug Jones. Re-elect Senator Doug Jones. Canadian with increasing election anxiety. Trump did to the presidency. Trump did to the presidency what Michael Bay did to Transformers. Complacency breeds contempt. Vote now. Jennifer Chakowski. Me, Grimlock, love Andrew's law stories. Tell Grimlock about Petro Rabbits again. You got the Grimlock voice for that, so there you go. Hi, I'm at Hans Royal, and I just voted for Joe Biden. That's it. That's my Patreon name. Mike Hall, an old, mad, blind, despised, and dying king. That Dickens, always with the compliments. Fly like a hot dog, Freedom Eagle. Say it with me, Meekus. Angry Macface. Corey Seager is my favorite Corey. Mm. Ugh. Corey Booker is okay too, I guess. Well, you should be happy. Sorry, Andrew, Uncle Frank is too far gone. Statehood for D.C., Puerto Rico, American Samoa, Guam, Northern Mariana Islands, and U.S. Virgin Islands. I actually have a deep dive on Puerto Rico statehood, but did you know Puerto Rico has over 3 million residents, right? Like, it would not be within the, like, bottom 10 in terms of state population. So, anyway. Center, Black Trans Sex Workers. The Books That Burn podcast. Reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. Vote, vote, vote. Vote, vote, vote. And get a flu shot if you can. Vote early if you can. Alfred Wallace. It's Thursday and I still don't have a Patreon name. If everyone listened at speed 1.3, you never go over time and more sweet legal goodnesses. This episode brought to you by the letter Q for quarantine. Change my Patreon name so that I don't jump every time you read it. Why is Stormy Daniels tax deductible but not OnlyFans payments? I call shenanigans. Murray Gregerson, what do a banana and a lawyer have in common? But I'm bump appeal. I move for a bad that was such a great bad law dad joke. Yeah. Oh, man, so good. So bad. I move for a bad president thingy. In Illinois, we pronounce it Illinois. It's election day. Time to clean up this mess, America. Thomas, we don't have time for a deep dive. Andrew, hold my beer. -infinity. Putting a pin in this patron name for later. Jake Braun, Brent Medling. I'm too sexy to vote for Trump. Too sexy to vote Trump. Trump needs to be reimpeached. I'm a lawyer. You know what I mean when I strut. etc. Christopher Brown, it's election day. What are you drinking to drown out the noise until Biden wins? Well, I will tell you tonight. Lawful Copter said he was going to vote Biden, but Trump tweeted Space Force, and now I don't know what to do. The wheels of justice turn faster than the speed I change my Patreon name. Vote John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock for Senate in Georgia. Yes, do that. Not that, Chris Wallace. Oh, man, I really porked my T3BE streak, didn't I? such a great
I did
such a great
last
reference.
Time, but now yeah. I'm starting a new one.
There's a goat. Why is there a goat? Give to modestneeds.org. Give to modestneeds.org. One way or another, it's going to be over soon. Let me drink lots of water. I like peeing totally clear. Zirkle. Vote like your vote depends on your vote. I love that. On the upside, Russian hackers are finally getting to participate in a democratic election. Polly Hernandez, the previous patron name is true. The next patron name is true, which is Josh Hoku. New York judges are not nonpartisan, but judges can run under multi-parties electoral fusion. Democrats and Republicans make deals. I get no choice. Check out the QAnon Anonymous podcast. Yeah, I think I missed that last time or the time before that QAnon Anonymous is, you know, kind of like a knowledge fight.
And right? I was right. And Andrew takes full responsibility for being wrong.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Emily Rainbow Spence, Duncan Dixon Coffee, Terry Cannon, Vote or Be Complicit, Jason Kopas, Hotspear.com supports the Jiu-Jitsu Court Act of 2021. Punching fascists is not enough. Get into good trouble and take it away.
All right. So much fun. Melania is a Russian super spy. You know what? They talk about, Andrew, they talk about what are we going to do post-Trump on the show. That's not a problem. What are the patrons going to do? What are the top patrons?
Wow.
Who knows? Maybe they'll do nice eminent domain patron names. We'll get a lot of detailed ones.
That'll be great.
Okay. Dealing with Republicans is playing Prisoner's Dilemma with someone that always betrays you. Drop ethics. Go with game theory. Super President versus Super Predator. Now, this time it's Supreme. Nate Drex, Darth Mandy Pants. Today is terrifying. Oh, God. Yes, it is. 13th century Saxony gravel truck lawyer. No idea what emotion lemonade is, but it sounds delicious. I am the bad things that happen in Philadelphia. Stay gritty. Jennifer Kratch. Diogenes the Cynic was right. Unionized Brooklyn friends. Jeff Gelbach. This truly is the darkest possible timeline. Wash your hands, then vote for Joe Biden. CivilPoliticsRadio.com. Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley Free Radio. Stephen Balticade Sandoval. John Bilderback. Thank you to everyone who donated, volunteered, and voted blue up and down the ticket to save the Republic. My hump, my lovely lady hump. Philip Kaiser, Andrea the Arbitrary and Capricious, Eric Alsman. I like traffic lights, I like traffic lights, I like traffic lights. Stop equivocating, they're not the same. Vote Biden. By Don 2020. If you don't vote, I, Piandra Torres, will poop in your mailbox. Absion,
well now.
Terrified for the future and lost any shred of hope for humanity. I'm glad that I went second here, so you didn't have to read that. Bane Strubbit, Trambolus, Drinking Burgundy and Reading Outbreak, A Crisis of Faith by Noah Illusions and Andrew Torres, highly recommended. Thank God she finally changed her stupid Patreon name. Oh. The Wandering Gambler, we're no strangers to love, you know the rules and so do I. The Full Commitment's what I'm thinking of. Definitely not voting for Hunter Biden as president. Yeah. Milo Meatsong is working the polls. Therese Chan, Boston Live Show 2021 with lobsters and karaoke. Join your labor union. Together we bargain, alone we beg. Put a pin in it, and by it, I mean your Trump voodoo doll. Ipso fatso. James K. Doctor at night homeschooling our kids in the day. Pretty sure my wife's a superhero. Chad T. Anonymous. Put some beans on it are my favorite reminders. Pins are a close second. How dare you? WordOrigins.org, your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. Welcome to your life. There is no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you. Well, that's ominous. RIP Notorious RBG. Hope you're all safe and well. Have a good week. An undisclosed senior government official from an undisclosed red state. Video. Yeah, it wasn't even worth talking about who Anonymous really was. Who gave a crap about all that? Anyway, video killed the Patreon pun. Liz Constitutional Kumite Weeks, Derek, terrified will be pecked to death by lame ducks. Adam Costa, J. Aldenwalt, a string of characters, each of which is pronounced vote. Nice. I like that.
That's excellent.
It's a good one. QAnon is a deep state conspiracy to make Uncle Frank even dumber. Rhonda 2020, because why the F not? The coronavirus apocalypse is making me too depressed to think of anything clever this week. Malaika Chandler, tricicular manslaughter. Do I get any fame and fortune for making an 80s reference that even Andrew didn't get? Yeah, probably. Soggy Pants, Matthew Vernon. Dear America, please don't F this up. Please don't F this up. Please don't F this up again. Sincerely, rest of world. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. Don't take legal advice from Laserbeam Monstrosity Attorney at Law. Heather L., Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium, Ian Anali, Danny Arzari, David in Brooklyn, Eli Bosnick, Sam Danow. Why, yes, that is jelly on my Biden yard sign. Stop stealing my signs or you get the jelly. Mitchell, no commute, so behind on podcasts. Please go vote now. Drop everything and go vote now. Natasha Crunchwrap wants you to support the Justice Policy Institute. Sam Buck, I agree with that 100%. And finally, Conrad Michaels. Hey, thanks, Conrad Michaels, for being our top patron through all of this, these last 4 years.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
And now it's time for T3BE answer time. Okay. Whoa, this is, we get to find out how I am for 200.
Yeah. Question 200 was a contract damages question, right? So bank agreed to lend a merchant $10,000 for 1 year at 8% interest, that he, the merchant, was then going to use those proceeds to buy some carpets, which had an expected profit of $5,000, didn't tell the bank. The bank reneged on the loan. And then the merchant had to go get a loan from another lender at 10% interest for the year. And by the time they got that money, the carpets had already been sold to somebody else. He lost out on the business opportunity. In an action for breach of contract, which of the following amounts is the merchant likely to recover? And so your options were, this is a question of damages. So the options were A, nothing, because damages for lost opportunities are not recoverable. B, nothing, because the parties failed to tacitly agree that the merchant would be entitled to damages in the event of a breach by the bank. C, this is the expectation damages, right? The difference in the cost over time between a loan at 10% and a loan at 8%. Or D, $5,000, the merchant's foreseeable loss. Those are the lost opportunities damages. You went with C, the difference between the loan at 10 and the loan at 8. And before I tell you whether you're right or not, I want to tell you in general, the way to think about contract damages is to think about two principles. If you think about these two things, you will almost always come up with the right answer, right? The first is, the court wants to put the parties in the position that they would have been in had the party who breached the contract not breached the contract.
Right.
Right. And the second is, the court wants to be able to do that with a minimum level of things that you could actually prove in court.
Yeah.
Right. So, I'll give you a preposterous example.
That is roughly speaking what I had in mind. So I'm hoping I got it right. We'll see.
Yeah. So, you know, preposterous example. I want to borrow $500 from the bank and the bank fails to lend it to, you know, says they're going to lend it to me, but then they don't show up with the money. And then I say, well, look, I was going to go to this yard sale and, you know, the guy was selling a Picasso for $500 and I can demonstrate, you know, right? Yeah. And here, and I would have bought the Picasso, but I didn't have the $500 and the Picasso is worth $1 million. So therefore you owe me $1 million.
Right.
Right. And the court would be like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Right. And would find some legal way to say that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. On the other hand, think about it this way. I say, I am about to open up, I'm about to close on the real estate to open up a building, right? And I need to pay the surveyor by tomorrow to file the survey. Otherwise, even though I've already built the building, the entire deal is going to fall through and I'm going to lose $10 million. You say, I get all that. I absolutely will wire you the money. And then I never wire you the money. And I have demonstrated, right, specific need directly tied to the action. And you might feel differently about, you know, my responsibility in that situation. So I say that to tell you the answer here, that A, you were correct to exclude A, right? It is not that lost opportunities are never recoverable. Mm-hmm. Okay, they may be recoverable in some cases, depending on the tightness of the fit. So the real question is does this present that kind of a case? You went with C, which is sort of the ordinary expectation damages. And Thomas, question number 200, you got that exactly correct.
All right.
Yeah. And look, there are lots of things, right? Like think about my kind of extempt building example. Mm-hmm. That this case was, there's a random business opportunity. Look, there are lots of banks out there, right?
Yeah.
Right? You know, it was not like I was depending on one.
It made clear that the bank didn't know about any of this. Was that important that the...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. The bank had no reason, right? They were not aware of the potential opportunity, and they could not have reasonably foreseen that that's what they were going to do with the money, right? Like the bank's not responsible for what you do with the money you borrow from it mm-hmm. unless you've said. And let me add an additional kind of principle on top of it that I sort of failed to appreciate this while I was in law school. And that is almost all of these contract principles are default principles, right? Like they're what happens when you fail to specify something. But in virtually every case, if you are negotiating a deal with someone directly, you can specify in the contract what you want, right? Hmm. You can say in the contract, time is of the essence in closing this contract. You can specify the exact amount of damages. It's called liquidated damages. You have to do it in a particular way. But you can say, yeah, even though you're loaning me $25,000, if you fail to do so by X point in time, the parties agree I will suffer a loss of opportunity of $100,000, and the parties therefore agree that in the event that that buyer fails to tender the $25,000 by X date, that seller will be entitled to a judgment of $100,000 in liquidated damages against you, right? You can specify that by contract, and by and large, that's valid in just about every jurisdiction. So that's a little bit of
what you're saying is I nailed it.
Primer on contract law, but you absolutely 100% nailed it. Yeah,
I should have been able to definitively say that B was the better nothing answer than A. This is the second time I've made that mistake. I think I've just. You know, I'm not a lawyer. Sometimes I get overwhelmed and my brain doesn't pick up the fine differences there. But yeah, B was definitely better than A, right?
Yes.
Okay. I should have known. So, you know, I'm still trying to improve, but got the right answer.
So,
do we have my official 200 score?
I have your official 200 score.
I can't wait for you to be wrong and then we can have a whole T3B gate again and I'm going to sue you.
I well may be wrong on this, which would be great.
200 out of 200. Yep, there we go.
But I think I've got this right, and here's what it is. Okay?
Teresa, I hope you're listening.
Please. In the second set of questions, you were 29 for 47, which is 62%.
Wow.
In the first run of questions, you were 82 for 153. And what that means is, if we round up to the nearest tenth, to the nearest decile, you are now officially at 60%, right?
No
you are,
way, really? Yeah,
no. But it has to be nearest decile. And what I mean by that is, one significant figure. You are 111 for 200.
Oh, okay.
Which is 55.5%.
Jeez, you really, come on. You pranked me. I'm not even close. I didn't understand what you were saying. I thought that meant I was at 59.1% or
no,
something.
No, that extra question, right, is the difference between you rounding up, you know, to 60 if you go to the nearest tenth. So it's not quite what you would hope for.
I do not understand what you were just saying. Okay, I got 50, what percent, 55?
55.5.
Okay, well. I have to answer a lot of questions right to get to 60 in the longer term, but you know what?
111 for 200.
Maybe that first 200 was just my practice set. We'll see how there I do on the next 200.
The next 200 are the easiest.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. Oh, what a bit. Well, you know, I got to play that victory music. What a 200.
You are correct. The best kind of correct.
He's not even a lawyer when he's kicking your ass.
I'm on such a high, Andrew. It couldn't be I know it means nothing, but like the timing of this this entire show, basically, you know, not counting a few of the months of bliss we had before Trump, this entire show has been all about these past 4 years, this election. I think it's fitting that the T3B 200 was during that time. You know, it just kind of it fits neatly. So here's to a better next 4 years and a better next 200 questions. How about that?
Here, here, here. Well, Thomas, with you basking in the glory of having gotten question number 200 right, I'm going to throw it to my own future self. So, future Andrew, let us know who got this one right. And past Andrew, I'm actually not going to listen to you since you're me. I'm going to go with an incorrect answer. Thomas, a lot of people got this one wrong. A handful of folks did pick C, but I really didn't find somebody who reasoned through as well as you did online. I thought the most interesting incorrect answer was Night Scoops, that is at Flagrantly Nerdy on Twitter, who writes, I'm going with D. The bank failed to disperse funds per the agreement. The merchant took timely, reasonable steps to make alternative plans to accommodate the breach, but lost out on a specific business opportunity nevertheless. That's wrong, but I think it illustrates that this is maybe a tougher question, Thomas, than you were giving yourself credit for getting it right. That is certainly a plausible read-through. I think that's balanced out against the harms that we talked about in breaking down this segment. But I thought that was good reasoning, if incorrect results. So congratulations, Night Scoops. Thanks for following us. Thanks for playing along. And everyone, give them a follow. That is at Flagrantly Nerdy, FlagrantlyNerdy on Twitter. And congratulations on being this week's winner.
All right, that's our show. Come watch the live stream tonight, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Come join us. It'll be a great time. Oh my God, please vote. Please vote, everybody. Please vote.
Please vote.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.